CliffCentral.com.
That's how my buddy likes it, on the rocks.
Yes, indeed.
Damn straight.
Straight, yeah.
All right. yeah, well, she's into the straight, too. It's 10 minutes after 8. It is a Tuesday morning, the 18th of April, and we're having some fun here. It's going to be a short week. Before you know it, it's going to be over. But I'm very happy to have Balin Jomani here with us. We don't see her often enough. She does the maid sessions with... Yes.
To Lisa Cindy.
Yeah, you were about to say something. You opened your mouth.
No, I was just going to say hi.
Introducing. With Tuliza, and she and Tuliza put together this really great, really interesting show. They've been doing some very, very interesting stuff with Machaga lately. Yvonne Chaka Chaka. Tell us about that. Fill us in quickly before we get into the rest.
Well, what we did was we collaborated with the University of Johannesburg to redesign the domestic worker uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a launch at UJ, and we organized a panel discussion, because obviously what needs to change first is a conversation. So if we simply put it in stores without a conversation, then we run the risk of changing nothing.
No one's going to know what happened.
Exactly, exactly. And we'll kind of fill it with the same stigma and all the things that's wrong with it. So we had a panel discussion, and we invited Yvonne Chaka Chaka because her mom used to be a domestic worker, and intuitively she just has a great understanding and a sense for things. And Timothy Maurice as well, who's obviously really good at explaining human behavior. And basically we were able to explore how clothing affects both the way that people perceive us and the way we perceive ourselves, and how we've
So what does the new uniform look like?
It's kind of cool. It evolves. So it goes from being a pinafore, which is sort of apron, into being a dress. And the idea is that it kind of aligns to the versatility that domestic workers have. And so they go from being domestic workers to playing so many other roles.
I'm so impressed with what you guys are doing. It's one of the reasons that I'm so happy that your show is on here, because you're immersed in this place where it affects so many South Africans. So many people are enmeshed in a situation where they have a domestic worker who's also like the part of the family sometimes, but sometimes the surrogate mom, and sometimes she's got her own family, and how that fits in. And, you know, there's this class difference, and it's all very complicated.
Dude, I will say this, and I think you said this, you pointed this out the first time you interviewed us. You said we'd opened a can of worms, and we didn't understand at the time, and thankfully so. So when we started, we thought that what we were doing was about exploring the untapped potential that domestic workers have in South Africa. But turns out domestic work is a metaphor for everything that is wrong with the human race.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's definitely a can of worms, and everything we, or far more than what we anticipated. But I suppose the upside is if we manage to address it, then we manage to address a lot of other problems at the same time.
Well, I think you're doing great work. Now, you're not here today to talk about the maid sessions at all. So we're here because a while ago, Mbali said to me, you know, people don't actually know how to argue. And a lot of us don't, and a lot of us use these old tried and tested techniques, which have largely been either outdated and replaced, or they aren't understood well enough by the people who wield them.
True story.
So we thought we'd look at a different concept every week and try to improve our arguments. When you have a discussion with someone about politics or economics or history or any of the things that we do get enmeshed in South Africa all the time, it helps to know what the language is, what the ground rules for having an argument are, and how do you define the victory conditions?
Precisely. Okay, so let me explain. For me, how this started is, like a lot of young people, I hate the news.
Yeah, it's
admittedly.
Mostly, it's depressing.
And admittedly.
And it's shitty. It's negative.
Yeah, it is. It is really shitty. And for me, it's not so much a youth thing. It actually gets worse as I grow older, because I become more and more aware of the implications, right? But I do make a habit of surrounding myself with people who are intelligent and informed, so I can rely on receiving secondhand information. But what this makes me is a third party often to people's debates. And it's amazing as a third party what you're able to observe about the way people reason things. Especially if you're not invested in the facts or the outcome of
the
conversation.
That's the best place to be in an argument, is when you don't have a dog in the fight.
Exactly, right? And what I notice more and more is that debates and arguments have very little to do with the facts and more to do with people's egos and their biases. And so this is strangely something I became kind of hyper aware of through my lack of information. And it's a field of psychology called, it's based on a field of psychology called cognitive biases.
Mm-hmm.
And these are common mental errors that people make that kind of derail their thinking. And it's really helped me, I think, to think better. And I think it can help all of us to be more aware of the way we process information and the way that we arrive at conclusions.
And in an era of fake news, it's important to know what information is true and what is a fact and what isn't a fact. What is opinion?
Exactly.
And what is a corruption of the truth?
That's precisely what we've confused. So the one that I thought I'd start with is the one that's most relatable to people, and it's called confirmation bias. And I think, I mean, do you both know, Tia and Mavali, do you know what confirmation bias is?
I'm not sure I totally understand.
You have to learn, girl. Teach.
Yeah. Time to make notes.
Okay, so this is one that I think runs rampant in South African discourse, and I'll get into why. But
what is it?
Basically, it's this idea that people deploy facts. So people deploy history and current events, for instance, to support or to reinforce their existing beliefs. So I'm going to start by suggesting that beliefs are the mother of all fuck-ups.
Yeah. this is the absolute
truth.
Yeah.
They are, because what beliefs do is that they devalue our reasoning. Okay, because a person with belief is like a dog with a bone, right? Except that a dog with a bone has a bone, right? It's a definitive thing.
Mm-hmm.
A belief is not definitive.
Yeah.
But we don't realize this because what we've done is we've confused our beliefs with facts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a strange thing that we've done, and it's problematic on a lot of different levels. So
in other words, you go into an argument believing a certain thing instead of having actual facts that are that don't care about your beliefs.
Exactly. So we get confused and we think beliefs are facts. And
so let's take something that maybe none of us are as passionate about than some of the more fractious things. Let's take something like global warming, which is very contentious in some parts of the world. In other parts of the world, it's established fact.
Mm.
So you go in and you look at things like the average temperature over a year. If you go into an argument with confirmation bias, you already either believe in global warming or you don't.
Precisely.
And you hold that to be true.
Precisely.
And it doesn't matter what the facts then
tell. It doesn't matter what the facts are, right? And if we look at the difference between a belief and a fact is something that is indisputably true. A belief is something we believe or we accept to be true. These are very, very different things.
And sometimes we've been conditioned into believing those things over time.
Exactly. So I want to start with a silly but intuitive example.
All right.
Okay. And you guys are a lot smarter than me, so you point out.
No. I'm absolutely not. Go ahead.
Well, actually, that is exactly the starting point, is to assume that you are the dumbest person.
Exactly. No, I've found that's an important thing to do.
Yeah.
And I try to make it
a
habit.
Even if it's not true, assume you are.
Yeah. Because that's actually one of the cures for a lot of these kind of mental biases, is just to assume that you know nothing, right?
Right.
Okay, so take a typical debate format, right? It can be formal or informal. So it can be between you and a friend at a coffee shop, or it can be a presidential debate between Trump and Hillary Clinton. What happens typically is that the participants' beliefs, like we were saying, precede the content of the debate. So off the bat, someone is competing to be right, either for superiority or for security in their own beliefs or for the presidency, right?
Mm.
So say the debate is all fish are racist.
All fish. Huh?
All fish are racist.
Okay.
So what?
I knew it.
So what are the the research tools we have immediately at our disposal? The first is our memory.
Mm.
Okay. Now our memory is not objective, right? Mm-hmm. But we don't realize that.
Yeah, it's not. It's very subjective.
Exactly. So our memory is a recollection of references and knowledge based on our personal experiences, right? The second thing we have at our disposal in 2017 is the Google search, the all-powerful Google search.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But even that isn't foolproof. No. So like I said, our memory is subjective. It pulls information that serves our intentions. Okay. Any ideas why the Google search isn't foolproof?
Well, because there's so much bullshit on the internet. Mm. And all Google does is rank it according to its popularity or according to who's paid for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, these days, any old fact can end up on Google, whether it's been verified or not. So you could be reading something thinking, oh, but this is a fact, but then who verified it?
But the problem begins with us, obviously. Right? It's the way that we use Google. It's our relationship with research. It's very, very self-seeking. So if, like I said, the argument is all fish are racist, what you typically will type into Google, if you believe all fish to be racist, is all fish are racist. Now, if you type that into Google, which is this infinite repository of information on anything you want, what you will find is a list of hits from seemingly credible sources that gathered legitimate data also believe that all fish are racist. And if you're somebody who's slightly more open-minded or inquiring, right, you might type in, are all fish racist? But what happens then is that your mind will conveniently gravitate to the answers that serve your confirmation bias.
In other words, you're not open to learning at all. Mm-mm. You want things that will make your case better. That's all.
But that's most of us, though.
Yeah.
In fact, that is...
all of us.
That is absolutely all of us. Very few is somebody prepared to admit defeat in an argument because the goal is to win. The goal is to prove I'm the right one here. You're the idiot for thinking otherwise.
Exactly. And so what happens? That's a good point. What happens when we're inevitably confronted with things that disconfirm our bias? What do we do? What's the natural thing to do?
You get defensive.
You get defensive. Okay.
Or you throw it out.
So you throw it out or you get defensive. Those are both right. So either you ignore what the other person is saying or the source is saying, or you write it off as stupid. So I call you stupid, for instance, and I discredit you by saying, well, you've never lived with fish, and so how can you know what you're talking about? And then you kind of cue the ad hominem attacks, right? Because it can deteriorate.
This is traditionally what happens.
Exactly.
Every time I've been in a serious argument, is people get personal. So ad hominem just means to the man instead of the facts. So you start arguing that person is a moron rather than what they think being right or wrong.
That's exactly right.
So is there a way to beat confirmation bias? Is there a way that you can condition your mind that all of us, this applies to everybody, I don't know anybody who's not guilty of some confirmation bias somewhere along the way, is there a way that you can condition yourself to be less affected by it?
Because I'm now thinking, in this day and age that we live in, we are now more affirmed, or our way of thinking is now more affirmed than ever before. Mm. I mean, when you look at who you follow on Twitter, for example, you follow like-minded people. Mm. You know, I personally, for example, don't follow Piers Morgan because I just like disagree with him, and it's like nonsense on
so
my timeline.
What you're saying here is very important, because the other dangerous thing that we do to reinforce this problem is that we surround ourselves with people, places, and things
which in my bubble everything I see is right.
That's what people say about Fox News, for example,
support our beliefs. And the most insidious product of that is groupthink.
Groupthink.
But do we even identify it as groupthink? Because it's like, oh, my world, everyone agrees. Meanwhile, you need to be able to identify that you created that world.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we don't have that awareness, right? And so the problem with groupthink is that if enough people of enough consequence believe an idea to be true, it may as well be.
Mm. Yeah.
In many respects, because we act on it.
That's why all those people who were protesting two Fridays ago, and I'm not going to say if it was right or wrong or if it had any effect or it didn't, but they were all convinced they were doing the most important thing in the world on that day.
Absolutely.
And whether or not that's true is up for debate. But talk to them about it and they'll get very upset with you because they spent their whole morning protesting. Zuma must fall. Zuma must fall. Zuma must fall.
This is the thing. This is confirmation bias is a universal problem, but it's a South African problem. And I kind of want to tell you why. And I want to use a semi-current example. Okay. I want to use Helen Zille's tweets.
Okay.
Her recent faux pas, right? So, and I like this example, because I know a lot of South Africans who agree with her in the sense that a lot of people will argue that colonialism, for some other reason, wasn't all bad or was good. Mm. And so what does she say? She says colonialism wasn't all bad, and you can correct me, because it brought a lot of industrial and infrastructural developments.
Yeah, more or less.
To Africa as well as resources, right?
Yeah.
Now, let's look at her reasoning. Okay. Her facts aren't necessarily incorrect. They're just incomplete, right? The reason they're incomplete is because she led with her bias. She led with the belief that colonialism wasn't all bad. And then she deployed facts to reinforce that opinion. Now, to paint a fuller picture, I'm going to say hypothetically, what if Julius Malema had tweeted, colonialism was shit, right? It looted African resources and it built up Western economies on the backs of cheap African labor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those facts are also not incorrect. But at the same time, they're incomplete, right? That isn't the full picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a lot more to it. And it actually goes beyond just the combination of what both of them are saying.
Mm-hmm.
But your acceptance of their facts depends on who is confirming your bias. So if you yourself believe,
mm-hmm.
If you yourself believe that colonialism wasn't all bad, then you support Helen Zille and you accept her facts.
And you must be criticized for it.
But similarly, if you climb on the Julius bandwagon, yeah. then you must be criticized for
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Yes, but yes. This is how we argue in South Africa.
You see, this is the thing, is we're also constantly worried about, how am I going to look if I support Helen Zille or Julius Malema?
Mm.
That factors into a lot of things, which is why...
How do I want my bias confirmed?
Yeah.
That's true. The other thing that's true, though, is that often South Africans use history or current events to reinforce their burning grievances from the past, right? Like,
yeah.
Because we're all still hung up. We're it almost feels like we're a nation with a chip on our shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Mm. So we use whatever's happening as a vehicle to settle our beef, and we pretend that we're having a conversation about the facts. But that's not always the case.
Aren't we hung up because when we go back home into our families, that the narrative that's playing out there is what's keeping us hung up?
Mm.
So what your grandparents have been telling you, your parents, your aunts, your great aunts, your uncles, your that narrative that gets played out in South African homes.
And for any kid growing up under the roof of your parents, where they infuse their ideology into you across the board, this happens with the way you view the world in terms of money, the way you view the world in terms of your social structures, the way you view the world in terms of things like climate change or gay marriage or abortion or religion or anything. Your parents put that stuff in your head while it's still soft, and a lot of it never goes away, no matter how much fact comes afterwards to disprove the nonsense.
And what I've come up with, actually, and you guys can add to this, is a list of auto-biases that I feel like we have as South Africans. But before,
oh, wow. This is going to get really exciting.
But before that, this is my theory on why South Africans have such short attention spans and we're distracted so easily, right? Uh-huh. So why we can go from concerns over social grants not being paid to Helen Zille's tweets to then fussing over two idiots at Spur.
Yeah, because this is what happens to us.
Exactly.
We're so easily distracted.
Exactly, because we're constantly just looking for a vehicle to give expression to our inherent prejudices and our inherent beliefs. And so what I've come up with, I've called... I think there's areas where we're particularly susceptible to this, and I've come up with what I've called South Africa's auto-biases.
Okay, let's go.
And these are areas where our beliefs hijack our intellectual processes, right? So where, you know, our objectivity, things that deactivate our objectivity.
All right, okay. Get ready, everybody. This is going to be embarrassing. Face up to yourself, and we're all going to have to realize that we're morons. So whenever you're ready, hit us with the truth.
Okay, so the first is racism and apartheid.
Yeah.
Right. That's something it just makes us all very kind of delirious and delusional. The other thing that...
So anytime that comes in, you've got to check yourself because you might be reacting unintelligently because you've got confirmation bias.
Exactly. The second is our sentiments towards the ANC. And that can be either like blind loyalty or it can be a burning disdain. But either way, I find it's something that makes people delusional. Agree? Mm-hmm. No?
Got you. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. The other is xenophobia.
Ooh, yeah. Very touchy.
Big one.
Mm-hmm. Very touchy.
The other is crime. The other is elements of economic redress, like BEE, the role of white monopoly capital, the land issue.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is white privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I have on my list is the ancestors.
Okay.
So these for me are all areas where people think they want the truth, but what they really want is their truth.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well,
then the question is why? Maybe I'm digging too deep with this.
No, that's a great question.
Why?
It doesn't take a genius, but according to researchers, it's because human beings are deeply uncomfortable with being wrong.
Yeah, that is confirmed to me on a daily basis. I'm guilty of it. I see people I know being guilty of it.
Deeply.
On a daily basis, I get that confirmation.
Deeply.
We hate being wrong.
Is it? That seems...
We hate it.
Simplistic.
Yeah, that seems too superficial for the lengths people go to for these things. Like, I know some people who, you know, will be vehement with their standpoints and, you know, what they have to say when it comes to their support or being against the ANC.
We also don't do well with uncertainty and things that we don't understand.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because I would think that it has to do with what sort of chord these causes or concerns strike within you, and that is unresolved, or that you haven't fully dealt with. Because these,
well,
you know,
it's like any kind of insecurity. Because these plates are insecurities.
Maybe that's the word.
Where you don't know that you're 100% right, and you fear you might be wrong. All of us, right? Whether you're on the one side of this argument or on the other, on any of those points that you've just raised, the minute you're insecure about your position or you're not so sure that your position can be argued factually, you have to get angry or you have to be emotive.
But when you have to go to the point of saying ugly things.
But that's because you've run out of argument. You've run out of fact to support you. So now you have to get mean.
But it's very survivalist.
Yeah,
it's just like a very primitive instinct, which is why there's no sophisticated way to really describe it.
And there's no sophisticated way to deal with it. You can't talk someone down the minute they've crossed that line into ugliness.
Mm-hmm.
I know it happens to me sometimes, and I look at myself afterwards and I go, ugh, you could have done that so much better.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah.
It does happen to all of us, but all is not lost.
Huh.
Well, oh, really? What a wonderful
leave us with something positive.
To have discussed.
Okay, so what the fuck do? We can't trust ourselves. We can't trust our friends, our teachers. We can't trust the media because all these things are instruments for...
Most importantly, you should not always trust your parents.
Yes.
Oh, whoa.
I don't mean to be... divisive and dangerous here, but... Honestly, a lot of the worst ideas are carried from parent to child and child to their children eventually.
And it's not just parents. It's anywhere where there's room for human bias.
That's like every encounter.
No, so the thing they do in science. In science, to prove your hypothesis, often you have to find evidence to the contrary.
You have to undermine your own argument.
Yes. And that's what strengthens your belief.
And you have to put yourself out there to be proved wrong by everyone else. So there's peer review as well. So what happens is that if you have a hypothesis in science, let's say I say that there is no electric current in batteries, it is up to all the other scientists to prove me wrong. They must go out of their way to make a fool of me. And then I must accept that I've been made a fool of, because that's how science works.
And there's a similar approach in law. I think now I have to recall way back in the day.
Okay.
But if I recall, the standard of proof in civil law is on a balance of probabilities, right?
That's correct.
Which, is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
Which means that, like you're saying, there is almost a peer review in the sense that
you want people to prove you wrong. There's no point in anyone coming to say to you, "You know, I agree with you." That is an invalid addition to a discussion.
Exactly. You take a multitude of perspectives into account, and you let go of the idea that you can be right.
And you should be more interested in the argument which disproves your argument than in any other argument.
But the other truth is that there are many varieties of right.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
What does that mean?
Well, there's nothing. You could have this point of view that some people have, that there is no such thing as absolute truth, that everything is subjective, everything is colored by our experiences. Now, there's a limit to that. Philosophically, it's acceptable, but scientifically, it's not. Mm-mm. I mean, for example, in science, you would say that there are men and women, there are male and female.
Mm-hmm.
But in philosophy, you could say that gender is a social construct.
Mm.
And in social anthropology, you would say that it's perfectly sensible for Bruce Jenner to feel like a woman trapped in a man's body, and that Bruce Jenner is actually a woman.
The problem is that we try to be right about other people's perspectives. Mm. It's quite greedy.
Oh. It's actually very, it's actually
now.
Also very arrogant.
It's extremely arrogant.
But most
just
people
say that
don't.
Again. We want to be right
about other people's perspectives.
Huh.
Meanwhile, let's have a hallelujah moment. But do you know what the danger is? The danger is we often aren't even able to recognize that we are doing that because from our frame of reference, this is our truth.
Mm.
So that is how we're able to pass judgment.
You know what? It starts with being aware of it. And we're so good at pointing out the holes in other people's arguments. And we just need to do more of that with ourselves. And I know it's counterintuitive, but we really do need to argue with ourselves. And I mean, I've always been criticized for playing devil's advocate. Whenever I feel like a conversation's getting boring, I just take an unpopular view sometimes. I do.
Oh, you are not my dinner party guest.
No.
Perfect for dinner party.
Not mine.
No. And
why do you think I invited her?
And I don't do that out of self-righteousness. Usually I give a bit of a disclaimer, right? So, you know, people who know me well enough will know where I stand. But, you know, I like to entertain divergent viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a really good exercise when you believe something to argue with yourself. And I think if you're aware that that's something that you can turn into a practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so to close, I'm going to.
I like this. She even has a conclusion, like a good scientist
this
would.
This is such a good.
That we're going to do. We'll do more of these. Trust me.
Introduction.
Yeah,
some substantial.
So today we've learned
meat.
A bit about confirmation bias, but we've also just touched on groupthink and on the subjectivity objectivity thing.
Oh, and by the way, I'm not saying that people aren't open to new ideas, right? So I don't want people to get too depressed.
Sure.
You know, we are open to new ideas, and we learn new things every day. The problem is that the things that stick usually have more to do with what we believe than what we take in.
And also, is that a bad thing, though? That is what makes us different to robots, because we carry memory. We have our own perspectives. Is like, to what extent do we change then?
It's a bad thing if we're living in illusions and we're doing that collectively, I think. Which is why I think something like groupthink is incredibly insidious.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just deprives us of making more balanced and more accurate decisions.
Especially when groupthink results in harm.
Mm.
You know, I often see how people get piled on, for example, on Twitter, because a group has decided to go after one specific individual because they may not agree on certain things, but then the whole group as a whole will take this person down, you know, kind of like how a lion takes down a leopard in the wild. Mm. And they will drag this person and they will call them all sorts of horrible, disgusting things. When groupthink becomes harmful, that is definitely a problem. Mm. Because it's no different to bullying.
Mm-mm. No, you're
so how did you want to conclude?
I wanted to conclude by saying, and I read this somewhere, if we're defining a person with common sense, we would probably describe someone who makes plausible choices, knowing that they won't ever have all the facts. They acknowledge their biases and navigate them. And most importantly, they weigh them against competing perspectives without conveniently discrediting those perspectives.
Hmm. Well, there's something to think about. And you might have to listen to this again.
I hope that you do.
I think I will.
Yeah, I think I will.
Thanks, oh, guys.
Damn. Thanks, yeah. Mbali. We'll have another session with Headmistress Mbali later on. Because this is good stuff. What other subjects are we going to tackle?
Oh, survivorship bias, which is actually a form of confirmation. Survivorship bias. So this is how we overvalue the methods employed by the people who win. So, yeah.
So, we'll be looking at straw manning.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be looking at a bunch of these things.
Loss aversion.
Loss aversion,
how we prefer to avoid loss. So we'd rather avoid loss than gain something, essentially.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I mean, there's a variety of them. I don't want to do them an injustice now off the top of my head. But yeah, we're going to be looking at all sorts of cool things.
Thank you, Mbali. That was great. Really cool. I hope we do this more often. We will. So there we go. 22:09. We're going to wrap it up in a short while. And then we've got a full lineup of all your Tuesday favorites, including the laws of life.
Mm-hmm.
What else do we have today, Sia?
We have Disrupt at 9 with Mbumintlapo, powered by T-Systems.
Correct.
Brent is back at 10 with the good stuff, brought to you by Brand South Africa. We have a repeat of Sipping Tea at 11. As you mentioned already, Gary Hertzberg at 12 with Laws of Life. Daily Maverick Show at 1 and Beyond Eyes and Ears at 2 as well. And
those
then
Beyond Eyes and Ears people have left crystals all over the studio. They've got a crystal in there. Have you seen them?
Yes, I'm still loving it.
Every corner of the room, there's a rose quartz crystal.
I think they should be called in with the renovations of those new studios as well.
We might have to do that.
Exactly.
Yeah, we'll be moving into our new old studio.
We're refurbishing
the old studio and making it new again, probably on Thursday.
And then In Conference with Michael Jackson, then we ended off with the Renegade Report at 3.
Very good. Tuesdays, busy, busy day. Which day isn't? On cliffcentral.com. The Chainsmokers with Coldplay and something just like this. Nice, huh? How productive do you reckon you'll be out of 10 this week?
No, I'll be productive. I feel rested.
Yeah.
Energized, optimistic, less miserable and grumpy than I was a week or so ago.
Yeah, me too. Full of energy. And it's good. I think we need more long weekends. I'm telling you, my old idea, which I actually stole from Lindsay Williams, I'll give him credit, was to take the 12 public holidays that we have in the year and spread them out evenly. So each month you get a public holiday at the end of the month when you have some money.
It makes sense.
I mean, just imagine how you could look forward to that all month.
Yeah.
You get the little 2-day weekends and then you know that there's going to be a 3-day one at the end of the month. And yes, it'll mean some people have to move religious holidays around, or you might not be able to celebrate your religious holiday on the day. And you know, I mean, Christmas would be that weekend of the 25th. You get the public holiday. So you make it work for you. So it moves 1 or 2 days. Big deal. It's far better for the economy. It's far better for you. Far better for me. All right. Let's get into some stuff before we clear out of here this morning.
Okay.
What do you got for us, Mubs?
Well, so I think it was Ben, who was the first person to, you know, tell us about United Airlines and the flight where one Dr. Dow was forcibly removed from the plane. So because United Airlines have been in the news over the last few days, their stock market price dropped, obviously. Mm-hmm. But now people are also, you know, making use of the opportunity to bring forth other complaints that they've had with United Airlines. So, yes, more and more people have come forward.
I call this the Cosby effect. As soon as one woman says, well, Bill might have put something in my drink, suddenly there's 50.
Yeah.
A second man came forward to say he had previously been threatened with handcuffs. His crime was paying for a first class ticket because the flight had been oversold. This is his allegation. In the same week, a report also showed that more pets died under the care of United than any other U.S. airline back in 2016.
Oh, they are pulling out the receipts here.
Oh, you know, you've got to do it while the story is still hot, Sia. Like, you've got to get, you've got to get mileage out of your story.
Excuse the pun.
Well, yes. And just when you thought that that wasn't enough of a PR headache, a scorpion apparently fell onto the head of one passenger on their way from Houston to Calgary.
Is this like recently or this is now just in
these
general?
Are just stories that are now coming forward in light of that of that footage that went viral.
Yeah.
Now it appears that a couple who were traveling to their own wedding have become part of the latest onboard scandal.
Oh,
Amber Maxwell and Michael Hall, they were flying from Houston to Liberia, Costa Rica for their big day. According to the couple, they arrived on the plane and found a stranger basically across their seats. Deciding that it wasn't an issue, they say they found two other seats elsewhere on the half-empty plane. Mm-hmm. Then Michael told the news, we thought, it's not a big deal if we just take up other seats. It's not like we are trying to jump up into a first-class seat.
No.
We were simply in an economy row a few rows above our economy seat. The couple say that then a flight attendant approached them and asked them to go back to their original seats. Shortly after moving back, however, the pair claimed that an air marshal arrived and told them that they had to get off the plane. Michael went on to tell the news. They said that we were being disorderly and a hazard to the rest of the flight, as well as to the safety of the other customers. So they were thrown off that flight. Jesus. However, the airline offered a different version of events, obviously. They say that apparently the couple were trying to sit in Economy Plus when they only had tickets for Economy, and that's where the whole situation got out of hand.
Well, I think these airlines are a bit draconian. You know, this whole idea of airline safety, which wasn't an issue before 9/11, seems to have got everybody a little bit crazy about authority in the sky. You've got stewardesses who are essentially just waitresses in the sky telling you, sir, I'm going to have you arrested if you don't do. I mean, it's outrageous. Imagine you go to a restaurant and the waitress says, if you don't like your food and you complain, I might have to have you arrested.
Yeah.
It's insanity.
But here's the thing, you know, now that the dust has sort of settled with this issue, well, there's still a lot to deal with, but now that we're able to actually analyze everything, you know, Ben last week was talking about the alleged, you know, sex situations.
Hey, Ben, are you there?
Yeah, guys, I'm here.
Okay.
So now so much info is coming out from the initial victim about Dr. David Dow.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. So background is that he and his wife were actually both doctors. They both have a history in the medical world. And like, you know, they have five kids, four of which are doctors themselves.
Jeez.
I know.
Look at that.
But Dr. David Dow's license was suspended back in 2003. Because of the, you know, trading prescriptions for sex situation, coupled with, yeah.
And this was with male patients, if I remember correctly.
We don't know that. Oh. I remember Ben in particular said it was a gay sex, but we don't know that. Coupled with the fact that he was also just trading a lot of drugs as well, you know, just like handing off just random pills. So his license was revoked back in 2003 and was recently given back to him on the basis that he only practiced once a week. So now do you sort of get why he was in a rush? Because it was probably that 1 week and he was like, listen, I need to get back home. This is the one day I get to, you know, get my coin. But other people are also saying that the situation was initially, you know, everyone got into the plane and the United Airlines staff asked who would want to volunteer. Mm. And then he put his hand up. Then he goes, actually, no, I don't want to anymore. And now the staff went at him saying, hold up, no, you can't go back on your decision. And that's when the whole scuffle situation ensued. So that is kind of some sort of justification, but also we don't really know.
Ben, didn't you say that there's some of this that might be fake news?
Mm.
Well, that's the thing, Gareth. You get all these, this like smokescreen coming across people saying, oh, that's true. And then they're saying it's a lie. So what I think United really wants is they want all this indecision. So ultimately people will go, oh, we don't know what we can believe. Because it could be completely true. It could be completely fake. But I think, you know, they're going to thrive in the sort of the upheaval it's creating because it just distracts from the original crime.
Well, what I love is, you know, when and Dr. David Dow, you should have known this, the internet, the receipts of everything, like now all of these stories are coming out. So people are also investigating. They found out that the doctor had like a gambling problem. Oof. And he was a professional poker player at one point. Wow. And even got a quarter of a million in winnings. I was just like, if you know you have a shady past, always stick by the book. But now, you know, there are the family now has two legal representatives. And there was this lawyer who has given an interview.
How incredible is this family? The father, the mother are both doctors.
No.
And four out of five of the kids are doctors, too.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that one kid who isn't a doctor.
What a loser.
Shame.
That kid killed himself back in the in high school.
Yeah, talk about feeling like the black sheep of the family.
I know. So some lawyers advise that the doctor definitely can build an assault and battery case against United Airlines and the city of Chicago as well.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, that's more money, folks.
Yeah.
And the way things are going, seems most likely that this will be an out-of-court settlement, which means a huge paycheck, because it's kind of obvious with so much evidence that yes. United doesn't have a case in court.
There's no way. I mean, United are going to have to fork out millions to this guy. And good. Let it teach all these other stupid airlines. I hate a lot of them. There isn't one airline that I love. Not one. If you think about it, they all treat us badly. They make us pay a fortune to fly. Man. Flying has become so unpleasant. And it's not just the airlines. It's the transport safety authorities on the ground. It's all of this checking and this paranoia around everyone with their electronic instrument that might be a detonator. And calm down.
Mm.
Flying is one of the safest things you could do. And it's not because of all those people in uniform patting you down and checking your bags.
Safer than being in a car, isn't it?
Much safer.
Or on the roads, rather.
Much safer. Even without pelicans.
If you look at a map of the sky and you see how many planes there are flying around at any given time, it is extraordinary how few accidents there are. Mm. Extraordinary. So there we go. Let's all calm down a little bit.
But as I predicted, the huge payday is coming from emotional distress.
Yep, that's it. You can sue for that in America.
And suffering.
In
oh,
South
yes.
Africa, if you try the emotional distress, they laugh at you.
No.
Chase you out of court.
Yeah, but especially with this guy, because even if he is offering free meds for hand jobs, like that's out in the open now. Yeah, so for his one day, he's practicing, his clients are going to go, well, look, I'm a bit short this month. I don't have any goats, but you know, I can give a good hand job. Well, the guy's like, dude, it's not like that. Don't believe everything you read.
He probably won't even have to work after this.
We got to get to unnews, but before we do that, Sia, just pop this in the diary. This is a good suggestion by somebody on WhatsApp this morning. Interview idea. Interview Liesl Tom from the show Beyond Eyes and Ears about the book that she wrote about Advocate Barbie. That's a very good idea. Plus, I don't think we've had the Beyond Ears and Eyes guys on. So let's have them on one morning. That'll be a very good idea. All right. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Mubs. Thank you, Sia. That's a wrap on today. We will be back tomorrow between 6 and 9 to look after you. Hopefully, Ben's back will be cured.
Yeah, here's hoping.
All right. And we can only hope. That's all we have. Keep hope alive.
That's all I have left.
All right. Here's the important stuff. As Zimbabwe and their economy continues to move towards the Middle Ages, parents are now trying to pay for their children's school fees with livestock. This is actually proving rather beneficial for the schools, because now not only are they getting some form of payment, but schools now have wonderful petting zoos for the kids to enjoy when they're not in class. In other news, the Huffington Post SA has just reported that they're fully behind Zimbabweans trying to essentially pay for their services of the livestock. Moving away from Western constructs like internationally recognized currency is a sign they're rejecting white males once and for all. And that's something that all African countries should do. And finally, John Terry has announced that he's leaving Chelsea at the end of the season. The 781-cap defender is seen as a legend to many Chelsea fans. But he's ultimately a shit bloke that will try and sleep with your wife. He's a known racist, and he's a full kit wanker at big occasions. So, good luck, John Terry. All right, everybody, we'll see you tomorrow. Be good. Keep it on cliffcentral.com.
Cliffcentral.com.